Off the ball rugby.
There is definitely an element from the player's perspective of standing up, and whatever the situation off the pitch, whatever the situation of the coaching staff in flux, they have four opportunities now to put their best foot forward, get four wins and change the whole trajectory of the season, and that's all they need to be thinking about.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tildenafil.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Thursday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock. Coming up, we're going to be joined by Kevin McLaughlin from 7:30, the former Mayo footballer. He'll be talking and remembering Mayo's near miss against London in the 2011 Connacht Championship. The counties are playing each other again this weekend in a Connacht matchup. The championship does begin this weekend, in case you haven't realised. So Kevin McLaughlin going to remember 2011 and the madness in London at that weekend. From 8 o'clock then, we're going to be joined by Richard Dunwoody and Davy Russell to talk about their grand national memories. Also that hour, Gavin Casey will speak to us about a potential boxing card at Croke Park this year. And after 9 o'clock then, the football show, we'll have Kevin Kilbane on the line to talk about the Champions League quarter-final first legs. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message. Daniel Pitcher will be delivering the news round momentarily. Daniel, how are you doing?
Evening, Owen.
Arthur O'Dea is here. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
And John Duggan is here. JD, how are you keeping?
Good evening, everybody.
We'll get into the Masters in just a sec, but John, quick word on Richard Dunwoody and Davy Russell. Been cramming on the greatness of Richard Dunwoody all morning today before speaking to him and before chatting to the lads. We are aware that Richard would have been Davy's hero, and for pretty good reason. He was a wunderkind back in 1985, 1986. He was favoured in 85, gets a job done in 86, and then wins it again in 1994.
Did you ever have to do that thing where you did the news and in the copybooks there was a bit of space maybe for a picture and then a few lines? You had to do the news on a Monday morning, and when I was seven I did the news that West Hip had won the Grand National, and I had a little bet on it. It was my first ever bet on the Grand National winner in 1986 when I was seven. It was in the blue silks with the dark blue sash. Very Dublin, actually, although there was no connection with the Dubs. But he slithered to the ground. Remember describing in the David Walsh book in 1985 on West Hip, the worst moment of his career, Richard Dunwoody. A year later, he won the Grand National on West Hip. And then 8 years later, he won in Minnehoma. Described, I remember, the time in the BBC by Peter Sullivan, who was 76 years of age at the time. And it was just a brilliant race on heavy ground. And it was Moorcroft Boy was there. And then Minnehoma and Just So. And you could see the BBC showed Peter Sullivan calling it on Peter himself with the binoculars and everything. And
amazing.
Owned by Freddie Starr. And then Davy Russell in recent years a couple of times in Tiger Roll.
Because the 1994 one takes on added significance because on Moorcroft Boy is Adrian Maguire, and Adrian Maguire, Richard Dunwoody, was the beef of that moment in National Hunt Racing.
They were both going for the title. It's Richard Dunwoody was riding for Martin Pipe, who was the big, he was the big machine of training winners. So Peter Scudamore and subsequently AP McCoy would champion jockey under Martin Pipe. But so Dunwoody and Pipe didn't really get on. But Pipe was just throwing out winners left, right and centre. But Maguire's riding for David Nicholson, and they were both around the same, around 200 each or something like that. So it was edgy. Look, I think the end of it all, it was good. But I'll never forget David Walsh's book. It's up in my house somewhere. Just the lines, the picture painting that he did. When Dunwoody won the title, he went for a McDonald's. He had a strawberry milkshake and a thing of chips. And that was the way he celebrated the title. And I just got, that always stuck with me, just the simplicity of his celebration, that he was just so spent. Obviously, he'd been wasting away on the sauna. And it was just pure relief that he went for the McDonald's after he'd won the title.
Yeah, it goes down as one of the greatest sports books of all time. I'm not sure, did it win William Hill Sports Book?
I think it was called Obsessed. And it was an obsession. Davey was, to me, has always been a bit more, I think Richard Dunwoody is very relaxed now, but there was all the thing about the going to the Antarctic, and it was very much that daredevil thing about him, and he had to retire quite early with injuries. But Davy went for a bit longer into his 40s, and as we know, we've met Davy a couple of times in the last 18 months, and look, it's a race that's changed significantly since when I was a young lad watching at the Grand National, but it still has a lot of stories. And last year's story was amazing, that Patrick Mullins rode the winner for his dad, Willie, on Nick Rocket.
Yeah. The other thing which we'll touch on with Richard later on is the 1993 race that never happened. But then also you talk about Davy there and the other ends of the spectrum that they are. where Dunwoody is the youngest rider in the race in 1985. And then when Davy Russell obviously wins on Tiger Roll in 2018, he's the oldest jockey in the race as well. So two ends of the spectrum there. And then given they're operating off two very different timelines, Dunwoody is actually Davy Russell's hero. So you set the scene well there, John. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Talk to us about the Masters then. Daniel, you might kick us off on this and give us the infrastructure here in terms of what's actually happening at Augusta.
Yeah, well, currently Shane Lowry and as well the defending champion Rory McIlroy have, well, I mean, I suppose it's the opening day. Early contention, I suppose, could you say, at the Masters at Augusta. Lowry, who early on had a double bogey on a par 3 and then another bogey much later on and another par 3, fell to one over par, is now 3 under. It took McIlroy some time to find a bit of form. He's now just one behind Lowry with, looking a quick glance, Sam Burns still leading on 5 under par. Tom McKibben in his debut at Augusta is 1 over par. It's the 90th Masters tournament that began with the ceremonial tee shots from Jack Nicklaus, who's 86 years of age, along with Gary Player, 90, and Tom Watson, who is 76 years of age, who've combined a total of 11 Masters victories between them.
So, something. Yeah, you've been keeping a close eye on this all day, John. The Lowry Eagle, probably the moment of the round so far from an Irish standpoint. 3 under, as we mentioned there, but the 13th hole managed to make that in 3.
Yeah, so Lowry has had a crazy round, folks. The first two holes, birdies. And then on the fourth, that double that Daniel was describing, it was a 3-putt from 3 feet. So it was just a head melt. Then he bogeyed 6 and then birdied 8, 29-foot putt on 9, went into the cup. And then from 99 yards, as you were describing there, on the 13th, took a couple of bounces. It was the approach over Rays Creek and dropped. And he's 3 under par. His iron play is very good. Like, he is playing well. His long game is good. For McIlroy, if you're all in on Rory this week, you should be very happy, because he didn't hit a first 6 fairways. He didn't make any of them. Very much a rusty start for McIlroy. Out of position, a lot of holes. But his short game's been pretty tidy. He's holding out well. First 8th, he had a really good approach and he made birdie there. And then the first real fairway, he flushed 9 and he set up an approach for a birdie. And he just made a really good par on 12 there. He's got a couple of par 5s to come, McIlroy. I think the rust has been shaken off, as I suppose is what I'm trying to say, in the first 12 holes now. And I think he's in a good spot now coming into the back 9.
Because the question on Lowry is, after what's happened to him on a couple of occasions this season, what'll happen if he's in the mix going down the home stretch, or in an extraordinary situation? What happens if Shane Lowry somehow is in the lead heading into the back 9 on Sunday? It's a long, long way away from here. But the one thing that you can look at is just in terms of how he managed to recover from the 3-putt in the 4th today. And actually, look, I know there's a bit of luck that comes his way on 13. But in terms of the way he's managed to turn his round back on form after what happened on the 4th is pretty impressive so far.
Yeah, forget about Florida, I think, with Lowry. I mean, Lowry had the much bigger pressure in Bethpage at the Ryder Cup. I mean, people talk about Russell Henley this or whatever. Russell Henley played the second best golf of the day at Bethpage in that Ryder Cup. The best golf that day was played by Shane Lowry. Shane Lowry had an unbelievable round in the 60th that day, and he said to his caddy, "I've got to finish this off," and he finished it off. So I think he can summon that. Whatever's happened recently in stroke play events, and he hasn't won a stroke play event for a while since Wentworth, I think he can summon that. The one thing about Shane is, does he want this too much? Because, you know, I mean, would it be anybody who would love it? I mean, McIlroy's obviously loving it this week, but would it be anybody who'd love it more than Shane Lowry? The whole... everything that's associated with the Masters, the jacket, the locker room, the dinner, the whole thing.
And you just think as well, like when he spoke after throwing away the Cognizant a while back, and he was speaking about when he was coming up the final two holes, and he was thinking about what that moment would have been like to have his daughter run onto the... And you wonder, kind of, had that kind of gotten too much into his head, and was that the reason he sort of threw it away? But this would be a big one now, to have his daughter run onto the 18th green at Augusta. You just hope that mentally he's sort of has it to, if he does find himself in that situation on Sunday, to finish the job.
I'm sure Kurt Kitayama, I'm sure Sam Burns want to win it just as much as Shane Lowry. But you are right, John. none of them would be as well suited to the green jacket wearing sort of company. Like Shane Lowry's who they want at the Masters dinner next year, not Kurt Kitayama. Sorry, Kurt Kitayama.
You won't be talking about Irish food the way Rory did at a press conference.
Dinner will be spectacular.
But it's up to Shane Lowry to get Irish cuisine back on side in the corridors of power at Augusta National.
Yeah.
Like Shane Lowry, just to spite what Rory McIlroy said this week, if he wins the Masters this year, he'll be showing up at Supermax next year to Augusta. Like if Tiger can do hamburgers, Shane Lowry can do Supermax. If that's somehow this.
And McIlroy putting the green jacket on him would be an even bigger.
That would be an Irish cultural, I don't know, meltdown, I think, to be honest.
When does the winner usually emerge? Is there a typical kind of day on which
Sunday night, Sunday evening, back nine?
But no, I'm not literally when they emerge. But like, typically, is there a time when you kind of want to be ahead, or is it player by player? Is there a time you want to be ahead?
It's after the 18th on the Sunday.
Is what you're asking when the tournament starts? Sunday back nine.
On Sunday front, we knew Rory was in the mix. I mean, Saturday you want to hit?
I think what I'd say is that there are players who are putting themselves out of the tournament now.
Okay.
Like, for example, it's interesting, the Liv lads, the Liv villains, I would call them. Ram is 2 over through 4 and DeChambeau's 3 over through 13. He had a triple bogey in the 11th. Scotty Scheffler's just teed off and he's, what, even par through 1. But, you know, Oberg, 2 under par. Rosie, we'd love to see. I mean, just beneath Shane Lowry, we'd love to see Rosie win after having last year. He's 2 under par as well. So Xander Schauffele is a lot of people's choice this week after the two major wins in 2024. Then he got injured. He's been playing well coming into this.
And Rahm as well hasn't had a great start.
Yeah, John Rahm. So he had a couple of bogeys in his first three holes. He's 2 over par now through 4. So it's about players just playing themselves out of the tournament. 12 over par is the worst score at the moment.
You can't win the tournament. You can sure as hell lose it.
That's all I'm asking.
You can certainly cliche it.
That's the conclusion.
Tommy Fleetwood is in there, 3 under par as well. He's had a good start.
Let's move on to the football. We've got some Europa League tonight, Dan.
Yeah, indeed. Crystal Palace forward Brennan Johnson is hoping to become a European champion for a second season in a row. He scored the winner in last year's Europa League final for Tottenham. He's aiming to fire Crystal Palace into the semi-finals of the Conference League. They'll play Fiorentina in the first leg of their last 8 tie at Selhurst Park tonight.
Looking back in like players' careers, kind of moments like this don't really happen too often, never mind within the space of a year. So I feel really lucky to be at a club that's been performing so well. And I think now it's just about kind of embracing the moment that we have.
Meanwhile, Aston Villa defender Matty Cash says they're in Bologna to get the business done. The teams meet in Italy tonight for the first leg of their Europa League quarter-final. Cash says that they don't want to be left with extra work to do next week at Villa Park.
We're coming here to win the game. We've made that clear. We're going to try and do what we can to put ourselves in a good position for next week. And yeah, it'd be a good game. I think, as I said, we're here to win the game. We're here to focus on ourselves, respecting the opposition. As I said, we know that they're a good side.
Another big game as well, just to finish that off as well, Owen. Nottingham Forest are away against FC Porto. Those games getting underway at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, nobody tells you how Thursday nights are going to hit you extra hard in the post-Prague world. This is the slot where we used to come on and say Troy Parrott is starting in the Europa League tonight, or even in the Conference League, I should say, tonight, and just say something about, I hope he doesn't get hurt ahead of Prague. Well, he is starting tonight at Shakhtar Donetsk. But nobody cares anymore. Nobody cares, it seems. So he is still in the competition. Ezad Alkmaar is still in the competition. As I say, Shakhtar Donetsk is who Troy Parrott and co are playing tonight in the Conference League. What's next for us?
We'll switch to rugby. Aaron King captains Ireland in Saturday's Women's Six Nations opener against the reigning champions England at Twickenham. King returns from a knee injury that ruled her out of the latter stages of last season and also the entire World Cup. Ailish Cowell and Katie Whelan are in line to make their international debuts from the bench. Pliana Maloney McDonald will win her 50th cap. And this is quite interesting, lining out against her wife, Claudia, who starts on the wing for England. I was trying to look back at these sort of dynamics, couldn't find too many of them where one comes up against the other. So that'll be quite interesting to see on Saturday. It's been quite some time since last year's World Cup when we last saw Ireland play, but head coach Scott Bemmond told Off the Ball today what supporters can expect to see over the course of the championship.
I think if you look at levels of confidence that the group is growing. We're a blend of experience and youth. In terms of like confidence and how we fire shots and how we get our best performance out there, I think there'll be a big difference. We've seen it competition on competition on competition. The last couple of years in the Six Nations, we've only won two games. Before that, there'd been a couple of years where they hadn't won a game. What we're seeing now is a transition to not being the new kids on the block. We want to be closing the gap on those top two. Now, is it this year? Is it next year? But certainly over this cycle, going into a next World Cup, we've got to start taking dints out of what I call World Cup contenders. So we've got to win our home games. Really important for us to build our wave, to get people on board. We've got a big game at the Aviva at the end of it, and we want to sell tickets, so we've got to keep growing that momentum.
Yeah, bumper preview coming tomorrow night on Off the Ball at Maggie Alfonsi and Fiona Hayes. 087-9180-180 is our WhatsApp number. Someone's been in touch to say, lads, what would we all do if Shane and Rory were in the final pairing on Sunday? Oh. Surely a bank holiday Monday would have to be called. And Hilton is saying that Supermax could be the main sponsor for the Masters next year.
I'd say probably more of a nation behind Shane in that one if that was the case, if they were neck and neck.
Yeah. Was it 2 years ago you were at Augusta?
It was, yes. Yeah. For Scotty Scheffler.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like no regrets about it not being last year, right? And you picked the right year between last year and the year before.
I kind of know what you mean, because I was writing for the Irish Daily Mail, and it wouldn't have been much of a... Yeah, I would have been tested. It would have been tested if McElroy had won.
Was it very much a sort of press room experience for you?
The press room, I don't know.
Like, are you stuck in there?
Well, I was lucky because I wasn't filing digitally.
Okay.
So I was able to go out and walk the course. So my work was finished at 4 o'clock in the day, 9 o'clock Irish time is when the paper would go to print. So a lot of the time during the week I would be writing. I got Bernhard Langer, and I spoke to Bernhard Langer before the tournament about Rory and Shane, but then I'd be doing more feature pieces about Liv, or feature pieces about after the cut was made about players who weren't doing so well. I'd be looking for little stories that were colour stories about the gnomes, for example, where they only sell in the merchandise shop 100 gnomes a day, and then there's a stampede for them every morning and they're gone within 5 minutes. There's a different gnome every year, kind of a figurine that they sell for $50, and then they're sold on eBay for thousands.
What makes them so special?
It's the FOMO. There's only 100 a day. So it's, first of all, you can't get merchandise that's sold at Augusta anywhere else. You have to be at the Masters to get it. But the irony is that, to say the top I bought was made in Vietnam, the hat is made in China. But the gnome is limited edition within the Masters merchandise tent, which does $1 million an hour by the way of sales. And there's an army of people bringing you in and out. So you do get to walk around. The thing about it is, Mark Hakovecki got thrown out of the course yesterday, former Open Championship winner in 1989, for using his phone on the course.
Oh, wow.
And had admitted in a call, a journalist called him, "Did you get thrown out?" "Yeah, I don't want to say much about it, but yeah, I was ejected from the course."
He was like looking up cat memes or something.
So I think when I arrived, I think for about 10 seconds, I realized that my phone on me, and then the guy was with me, like, just got like pretty cross and goes, get the phone into the course, because for the media, they have to leave their phones in the locker, mm-hmm. and then they go out into the course. For the punters, you're not allowed to bring your phone even anywhere near the venue itself.
It's not different on practice days.
That. Practice days, no phones, but you're not bringing your cameras.
Did you see Xander's shot into the patron's bag earlier today?
Not yet, no.
There was a woman with a merch bag. She left it down and... nothing but net right into the bag, and people were commenting that they really hoped that there was no garden gnome in the bag, otherwise that would have been shattered, and there goes her chances of making a bit of a killing on eBay.
I'm sure Xander would have been okay about it. Do you know the thing about the chairs, don't you, where if you got a chair, you buy a chair, you put the chair down wherever you want to put it, and you put your name in the back, and you can go off and watch the tournament, and then you can go back and sit on that chair. There's an honor system around the chair. Oh. So I can sit on any chair I want. And it just, the only thing is, if the person who was originally there with the chair comes and says, "I'm back now," then you've got to vacate it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, just the first thing they do is they run off to the 18th. Well, you're not allowed to run. If you run, you're spoken to by security. Don't run. it's a very strange environment. There's a lot of guys. So the green jackets are the members. They all go around with the jackets on. There's about 200 of them. So you know they're the kind of people, they're the eyes and ears of the Truman Show, which it feels like at times. But you put the...
the seat down, you, if you want to rush off to the 18th or the 1st, and then that's yours for the day. And you can sit there again, even in the, including the final round.
Did you have a pimento cheese sandwich?
I did. It is, it's kind of uniquely strange, and it was good, yeah. It's almost like a paste. It's like a cheese bread, like a cheese paste with a bit of spice to it.
Okay.
But they kind of manufacture them in bulk, so the bread is not, it's not, you know, your beautiful Irish bread, but it does a job.
Still only $1.50.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It costs so much money to get in there that everything, oh, yeah, well, the concessions are really good, and there's no advertising on them. It's all, once again, an Augusta National branding. Mm. So a lot of the things people do is they buy a lot of beer cups and they bring them back to their hotels or whatever, wherever they're staying, because Augusta itself as a town has sometimes parts of it have seen the better days, and that is a little bit of a sense of friction, because the complex itself is like, it is a bit of a Disneyland, because there's literally not a blade out of grass at a place.
With all of those rules and procedure, you'd wonder how Shane Lowry got a hurl out. And
yeah, I was wondering that, to be honest, when I saw it. There's a lot, I think they'd never, see, a lot of the things they don't comment on how many people go in there every day, but there's plenty of space to walk around. Mm. Plenty of space to walk around. But the great thing about it is, with no phones, there's no sense of time. Because there was, I remember I met a guy from a Galway guy and a Clare guy. They were in GA jerseys. And I told the Galway guy, do you know you were on Instagram walking beside Greg Norman there? This is at the time when Norman and Liv, and it was quite tense between the tour and Liv. And he had no idea, because he had no phone. And so this guy, you know, I think his name is Evan Kilroy, was his name, if I can remember rightly, the gentleman. He had no idea that he was in a shot with Norman on Instagram. I think Norman put up on his own Insta, but he had no idea until we told him. And they have to go back to his hotel room and then see, you know.
What's the idea with the lack of phones? Why is that? Is there a rationale for it?
I think that's very much, it's a peace and quiet thing. It's a noise thing. And
I see a lot of people online were very annoyed with how ESPN covered yesterday afternoon, because they brought Pat McAfee, the Kelce brother who's not engaged to Taylor Swift. What's Travis's brother's name? Jason,
is it? Yeah.
Jason was there, and they kind of went full sort of glitz in terms of their pre-tournament coverage. And a lot of fans just say it flies in the face of what Augusta's supposed to be. And that sort of preservation of, you know, you can turn on your television, and other than the fact that it's HD, it should look like 1976. It's kind of maybe what they're going for.
Well, it does feel, but also it's first of all, it's the noise. Your cell phone goes off at Augusta, that they've done everything in their power over months to make it as pristine and as perfect as possible. And then some cell phone goes off, or a ringtone when somebody's approaching a putt. And then obviously this predilection society for everybody now to film the most important moments in live sport on their phone, as opposed to watching it and remembering it.
Mm. Rory McIlroy has birdied the par 5 13th. So that brings him up to 3 under par as well, just like Shane Lowry. So they're all in a tie for second alongside Kitayama, Jason Day, Patrick Reed, Fleetwood. Rye is in there as well. So they're all on 3 under. And Sam Burns still leads the way on 5 under. He is playing the last at the moment, Sam Burns. So looking good for Lowry and McIlroy so far. What's next? You've got a little bit more rugby news for us.
Yes, the Munster prop John Ryan will retire at the end of the season, finishing a 16-year professional career. The Cork native has made 256 appearances for Munster, the third highest in the province's history. He also won 24 Ireland caps and featured at the World Cup in 2019. The 37-year-old said that it was a privilege to represent both Munster and Ireland. Not the only provincial departure that was announced today. The France international tight head Raba Slimani will leave Leinster at the end of the season to go off and join Toulon on a 1-year contract until 2027. The 36-year-old brings vast experience, as he's won the top 14 with Stade Francais and also played 59 times with France.
Now then, we have some news on Katie Taylor, or at least a little development that might be significant.
Yeah, let's hope that this comes true. Katie Taylor could yet realise her dream of fighting at Croke Park, with talks underway for a blockbuster card to also include Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. The proposed 80,000 capacity event will provide the perfect stage for Taylor's potential farewell bout later this year. Croke Park chiefs say that a mega fight involving Fury and Joshua could help make it more financially viable and deliver a fitting send-off. Taylor, obviously obviously widely regarded as one of Ireland's greats, expressed her wish to finish her career on home soil. Promoters are continuing discussions with several elements needing to be agreed before a historic boxing night in Dublin can be confirmed.
We're going to be joined by Gavin Casey at around 8:40 this evening to get a little bit more detail on that story. Now then, we've got some news with regards to Manchester City and an FA Cup fixture change.
Yeah, they could yet make life uncomfortable for Premier League leaders Arsenal as the title race enters a decisive spell. Pep Guardiola's side have a chance to take 6 points in a 4-day spell with a crucial clash against Arsenal, followed by a trip to Burnley. City also have an FA Cup semi-final against Southampton at Wembley on the 25th of April to contend with a packed schedule. They're currently trailing the Gunners by 9 points, but could cut that gap significantly with five Premier League games remaining. A postponed home fixture against Crystal Palace is to be rearranged, potentially adding further pressure in the run-in.
Okay, and then finally we have some horse racing results.
Yes, Brighter Days Ahead stepped up to claim victory in the Aintree Hurdle on Merseyside for trainer Gordon Elliott. Ridden by Jack Kennedy, the 13-8 favourite travelled strongly before pulling clear late on to win by 2.25 lengths. Earlier in the card, Elliott and Kennedy combined for success in the anniversary juvenile hurdle. The 5-1 chance battled to hold off Selma Devary, and secure by 3/4 of a length.
Just one other piece of football news this evening coming out there in the last little while. Liverpool posting on social media that we can confirm Andy Robertson will bring his Reds career to an end at the conclusion of the current season. They said he will do so as a Liverpool legend. I think, amongst other things, the fact that he managed to bring such an amazing attitude to this year's campaign, knowing that they had signed Milos Kerkez, a man who was going to take his position in the longer term, and that Robertson sort of helped him along, helped him settle into the club, and was pretty gracious about initially losing his place at the start of the season. It's kind of what I remember from this season from Robertson in a year that won't be remembered for too many positives for Liverpool.
Well, I remember that he didn't go to Spurs and we could have really done with him.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Transfers that didn't happen.
Yeah. And Spurs have had a lot of them. Scotland as well, the World Cup. I mean, he's going to look forward to that, isn't he?
It'll be funny how... So when's Klopp is gone almost two seasons. And it's funny, like, even by the tail in the next season, the whole team's going to be different. The whole thing will have changed, like, in terms of who's gone and the whole identity. But it's just funny how quickly that can happen. And that's just another kind of linchpin of it gone again. But, I don't think it's not surprising, because I think even the news from January as well, like there are the potential of him going, so it's probably not too much of a surprise, but I wouldn't exactly say, as to your point with Kirk, is that it's been an astute replacement as yet. He'll leave a pretty big hole.
John, any tips for the Grand National yet? Are you still formulating your ideas?
I've got to do it this evening. I need to do it properly.
How long will that take?
It'll take about... It's 2 minutes per horse, so 34 horses, 68 minutes. Oscar's brother is a horse I just love to see. I think it's a wonderful story. I'm looking for the stories, really. Soldier Milano was at Ferry House on Monday, and Soldier Milano was a very easy winner of the Irish Grand National, which had 18,000 people there at Ferry House. It was a really good day for Emmett Mullins and owner Paul Byrne and jockey Donna Myler. But Oscar's brother, Conor King, is training down in Tipperary. He's from Cork, and he's only got two horses in the yard, and Oscar's brother is one, and his brother Daniel is going to ride him for JB McManus on Saturday. And I'd love to see them do well and make the frame. And any kind of story, but I haven't made up my mind yet.
Have you been to the Grand National before, yeah?
2002, only the once, when Bindery won for Kerry jockey Jim Cullity. So it was a long time ago now, the Martell Grand National, now the Randox Grand National. But 34 horses. William Mullen's got a very strong hand. Nick Rockish, who won the race last year, has been ruled out of this year's race. They're just not ready in time. So Patrick Mullins will ride Grange Clare West. I Am Maximus, the winner 2 years ago, will be ridden by Paul Tennant, the Gold Cup winning jockey. But William Mullins got another very strong hand, but as does the owner, JP McManus. So we got a live racing pod 2:40 on Saturday and Off the Ball Saturday, and myself and Johnny Ward will go through the very latest moves. Nick Rockett actually went off 33-1 last year. He was only 18-1 in the morning, so things can change between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. So that's what we're going to hope to bring you, the very latest news. But have I made a decision yet? No. I'm going to do it this evening now and go home.
Well, keep tuned to Off the Ball social channels and to the Racing Pod this week to get a sense of who John Duggan is picking. John, Daniel, Arthur, thanks a million for tonight's news. John, we'll be catching up with Kevin McLaughlin after the break to reflect on what ended up being one of, nearly the biggest shock in the history of the Connacht Championship when London had Mayo on the ropes back in 2011. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.